My name is Ben. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Alchemy, and welcome back to another episode of Lab Talks on a brand new set. It's very exciting. And today I'm joined by Eleanor. Eleanor, welcome. Would you like to introduce yourself to everyone?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Ben. Excited to be here. And yeah, it's quite a swanky set.
It is, yeah. It feels quite overwhelming compared to what it usually does. We've come a long way.
Yeah.
I think it probably makes sense to start at the beginning. I mean, you weren't always in Web3, I imagine. Like, where did you come from? And then kind of what brought you to Web3?
Yeah. So I'm Eleanor, head of platform and ecosystem at Fabric Ventures, one of the first sort of Web3 native VC firms in Europe, but we are a global fund, but specializing within the open economy, so Web3 and AI, quantum compute.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's really exciting, about 108 portfolio companies and just under sort of 200 million AUM. So it's exciting time for Fabric. Prior to that, I was in a Web2 VC for 3 years. Also leading on sort of community and platform and value creation for founders, and really understanding and supporting founders to find product market fit, which is something that, especially in Web2, that VCs bang on about.
Yep.
Less so in Web3, but definitely want to bring that across, because
you
create value, you have like a sticky product, and everything else follows, in my opinion.
Yep.
So I think that's... and then before that, I actually founded a few companies.
Oh, nice.
One travel tech company, and then a community of women, which was 8,000 women, called Female Founders Fair.
Oh, cool.
Worked in employee branding, a little bit of consultancy, and actually did some work for Tech Nation and Accelerator. Mm-hmm. So we've always been in kind of the startup space since like, well, years, 10 years. Mm. I'm not going anywhere, but I definitely am very much excited about the crypto landscape and blockchain and AI, and just feel like that's where tech used to be in 2016 and kind of don't want to miss out.
So there's two things I thought were quite interesting there. The first one is you have quite a lot of portfolio companies. Mm. Like, what does your interaction with them look like? Like, what do you do? How do you help them? Like, where do you kind of add some value for them?
Yeah, there are a lot of portfolio companies. So it's like, how do you build for scale?
Mm.
The ones that we're on boards with, obviously we're on boards, but we have a Telegram group with every single portfolio company super active. We also have a portfolio Telegram group where we like have broadcast messages or people can ask different questions. We also run ran 9 events this year, 9 or 10 events across all the big conferences as kind of a touch point, engagement point with our portfolio. Mm-hmm. I have relationships with probably, most, if not all, the portfolio companies. So like if they sort of know me on a personal level, so they can sort of ask if I need something and then I can point them in the right direction. That's quite a casual relationship.
Yeah, okay.
I would say my relationships in a Web2 VC, we also have like a resource hub, et cetera, which is a bit more vetted service providers, a bit more sort of scalable and passive. But in terms of one-to-one, it's all around the relationship that I just sort of spend the time building and sort of keeping an eye on news and sort of what's important. And also some founders, like serial entrepreneurs, don't need as much hands-on.
Yeah.
Support, whether that be around like hiring or like go to market, where like first time founders, you know, they've not done this before, so you need to actually allocate more time. So it's also identifying who needs support, who needs time, and where your impact should go.
I'm a first time founder, and I think we certainly fucked a lot of stuff up. I think it's you don't know what you don't know, and I think hiring was a tricky one for me for a long time. Like, I think at least at the beginning, you've got to get some people just to care about what it is that you do. So we were hiring people that we knew, and that worked really well in some instances and less well in other instances, and move past that. But that was tough lessons to learn. I think probably a bit of a distraction at points as well. And I think now we've got a much better process of... We moved away from like job descriptions to here's what you're going to do in your first 30 days, here's what you're going to do in your 60 days and 90 days, and that is the job description.
100%.
It's like solving a problem for us, not we need you to do this thing.
Yeah, I think they've got to be bought in on the vision, the end goal, and that vision's got to be clear. But like by breaking things down, you make things a lot more achievable. Without a goal, you can't score, right?
Yeah. Alchemy as a business kind of sits between blockchain and ad tech to like Web 2 and Web 3 ideas, really. But
were you hiring from Web 2 and Web 3? Did you need to make sure that you know, essentially everyone you employed was on chain. Is that a requirement or not?
Yes and no. So there's still some parts of the business that are very web two. So like the sales function, to some degree, that's just a sales role. So like that doesn't really have a genre, if you want to call it that. But on the development side of things, there were like very heavy blockchain developers. But then equally, we split it to like the ad platform and the blockchain platform. So that, and then also I was like, okay, if we get too many people that are, have come from ad tech, they'll want to build it like other ad tech products in the past. And if you get too many people from blockchain, it won't look enough like an ad tech product for it to find product market fit. So that is an ongoing balance. It's like sometimes it feels a bit schizophrenic, you know, like, so I wear my ad tech hat for the day and then I wear my blockchain hat for the day, and they are very different, even just with the way that we speak to potential users. Like we have kind of three users. You have like people that buy ads, people that sell ads, and then people that support the network. So that has been like, we've got 1,200 validators on the network. We want advertisers to become validators. We want our media owners to become validators as well. But some media owners, like we work with News UK, they still print a newspaper. Talking to them about validators can be quite challenging. Advertisers and media agencies, some of them lean into it more. So like we do a lot of work with publicists. They've got a huge Web3 team. Like they're now the biggest media agency in the world and are looking at Web3. I think they've got, their head of blockchain was at Consensus this year. So like they'd identified that as an event that made sense for them. And that was really cool for us to see one of our partners being at a blockchain event, because IPG weren't there and Omnicom weren't there, but Web3 is big. It's going to become bigger. So it was cool that a massive company like Publicis were like, we're in a blockchain event.
That's awesome. Katie Hudson from Publicis.
That's right. Katie Hudson, Chris Outram.
We've just done a little shout out.
But
I always think as well, because Web3 is so much about the culture and it's about like the, you bring people around like a joint mission. And so I think one of the best ways to sort of understand the mission and what people are trying to build is like actually just allowing people to experience that. And so bringing them into like a crypto native conference, like a decentralized conference like Consensus, is probably one of the best ways to sell, right? Like have, be a part of it.
And I think blockchain conferences are quite unique, because like ad tech conferences, it's like it's all B2B. People are there because they work in the sector. But I think blockchain is a bit more, it's like B2C and B2B. Like you get people that are there just because they love crypto and they don't know many people that do, and they can go to that conference and just speak to people about blockchain. So I think it's like a slightly different makeup of people that attend those events, which can make it difficult to like prove how valuable those events are. And I think we were talking about this earlier, like how do you think about that? How do you talk to your portfolio companies about that, on like, are the events valuable? How valuable are they? And why should they approach them?
No, I was, we were just saying earlier that in my, with my Web2 hat on, when I was in Web2 VC for 3 years, I was a bit like, you know, events are nice to have, or conferences in a way. Like you have SASTA around SAS and in Barcelona, and obviously Slush, which is still kind of a big one for fundraising for funds. But I was a bit skeptical when I came into Web3, and I was like, what, like all these founders are just touring the world on like road trips, like meeting up all over. Surely they should just be heads down building. And then I guess when I started it, actually doing the same, and spent the last 2 years also doing all of the conferences, I completely misjudged. Now I think that that conferences in general, if you're thinking about like what you want to get out of it and you're going into the conference intentionally, most of my network who I've met who like forged partnerships or open doors for portfolio companies, like the space is still so small, so it really is who you know. And one of the best ways to build relationships and rapport with people is in real life. And you can't really replace that, like body language and telling them a little bit about you personally, and them seeing you in flesh. I think you might as well have 20 Zoom calls for the same ROI as like just meeting that person for a coffee for half an hour. So I actually think it's a great way if you can, if you know your network's going there and you know it's like hits the criteria of like, so your customers are going to be there, I think go.
They're just far away. Well, we're in London, so nothing's that far away, but they do tend to be in far-flung corners of the earth, don't
they?
Yeah,
like, I was in Bangkok for DevCon.
How was that?
Oh my gosh, I got the zoomies. I just love motorbikes.
Really?
yeah, I was like, oh, if only we could all just go around on motorbikes. But it was an amazing conference in a sense that obviously I think Bitcoin hit sort of $90,000 while we were out there, which was like an all-time high.
Yeah.
Well, now it's not.
Yeah.
But it's was.
Old news. Yeah,
it was. And so the sentiment was amazing. And I think people who've sort of stuck in the space, and I joined the space in the bull, in the bear market. Mm-hmm. So I joined sort of late 2022. And okay, so everything was, you know, back in building, which I think is really important. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't lose sight of that. We're here for the long term.
Yeah.
But the sentiment's up and people are happy. And I think that just creates an environment for like interesting conversations, right?
Certainly, yeah. I think people are more, I think they're probably more risk on in a bull market for sure. Because I think we had a similar sort of story. So Alchemy's now 4 years old, but we've been, Chorley and I and Chandra.
So 4 years, so was that COVID times?
It was, yeah. So I was working in influencer marketing at the time and I absolutely hated it.
Yeah.
I'd met Chorley in a previous job because he worked at Condé Nast. So he created Condé Nast digital ad product. Mm. I worked for an ad exchange at the time. Mm. So I was trying to onboard Condé to our ad exchange. Mm. Chorley actually got me into crypto like 2016, 2017. And we just kind of messed around with it. And then I think it was COVID where we could like pretend to be doing our day jobs whilst actually focusing on Alchemy. And then we met Chandru and kind of the three of us then founded the business in May officially of 2021.
And you went full time at that point?
Pretty much, yeah. Mm. So I quit, Chorley quit about 3 months afterwards. And then Chandru was about the same time, which was quite scary. And then we launched the token in 2021. Caught the end of the bull market then.
Nice.
And then it had been kind of like, well, up until now really, that it was sobering, quite sad. Up. Yeah. But I think it stopped a lot of the distraction. You know, like we went from nothing to our own layer two with 1200 validators that can support our transactions. So like that's kind of like zero to one. And I think your point about product market fit, and I think we've spoken about this on a panel before. We had someone asked a question, if you remember, and he was like, this is what my platform does. And
how do I sell that to Web2?
Yeah, and I think we both kind of agreed. It was like, but what problem do you solve for people? And I think that can often be overlooked.
Yeah. I think with any new tech, there's a lot of developers are just sort of building because they want to build and because they're excited by the technology.
Yeah,
but
certainly.
There was less commercial people in the space. I actually think it's quite interesting. You know, I've come from media.
Yeah.
I want to apply this technology to media and understand where it's like sticky and where I can solve real problems.
Yeah.
And that's essentially, you know, that's how founders should be thinking, regardless of the space, where there's obviously a lot of people who set up companies because they just want to be in the space. So I think finding a problem that you like generally care about and you can dedicate 10 years of your life to, because like, as you know, it's not a small ask starting a company. Like you've got to be like in it and really understand what problem you want to solve. And then, you know, ultimately what technologies are complementary to that and how do you apply those technologies? And that's when like real use cases will be created for the space. And then really you create a valuable company, your token will fly.
Yeah, I think that's one of the, because I'm not a technical founder. I'm not the technical, Chandru is. I have always been more of a commercial person. So it was, I think I was quite early really in being like a commercial person in blockchain. But the reason I had such high conviction about what it was we were doing and how blockchain could solve the problems is because I'd worked in an industry my entire career and could see those problems.
Exactly.
And it's like, I know 1,000 people with the problem that I'm solving. So like, I don't have to be like, I think we can find this person here. It's just like, hey mate, we can make your ads more transparent. And like, well, that's actually quite interesting for me. And it's like, knew it, you know? And like, having a really interesting conversation with our non-exec director. He is a non-exec director for Alchemy, but his day job is he's an SVP over at Warner Brothers. Mm. And we had this really like nerdy conversation about the way in which people bid on ads is that ad inventory sent to a buyer is kind of arbitrarily throttled because it's expensive to listen to the billions of ad requests that exist.
Yeah.
and then the buyers start to bid. But what actually makes more sense is if it's more like an order book that you would see in crypto. So it's like, here's all my bids, here's all the prices that I'm asking for, and then you can kind of match them in real time. But that doesn't happen necessarily. So there's such just like inefficiency with the way that auctions are matched. And we were talking about it in the room next door. I was like, I think this could be quite a cool idea. And then we spoke to Rob and he was like, that would be a cool idea. So like immediately you can be like, okay, this guy knows what he's talking about. He can validate what we're thinking. That can then help us prioritize the products that we build rather than just being like, hey, we can just build anything on this platform.
Well, that's also the biggest problem that founders have, or that I've seen in the last sort of five and a bit years in venture, is founders spreading themselves too thin and not having like a focus. And so they keep moving the goal, and then there's like, there's how they can't execute on anything. And so like being centered and knowing kind of what your roadmap is and where you're going, and like speaking to your customers, is just so important versus like trying to do everything and be nothing.
Yeah.
And you've probably seen that.
It's tough though, because like a lot of blockchain companies are still quite B2C in some degree.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's quite narrative driven, I think, as well. So it's tough not to get pulled in a certain direction.
True, everything is narrative.
Which has worked against us a little bit, because we don't necessarily fit into one specifically, you know, like we have a distributed network that provides compute. So you, okay, that's a bit deep in, right?
And then how do you engage that audience?
Without just being explicitly deep in. And then it's like, well, the other point that we're making is that there's $600 billion of ad spend that's off chain that if you run a validator, you can earn yield from. So that like makes it a bit more RWA.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we're also like, and then also we provide layer two for ad transactions to take place. So we are infrastructure. So it's like, okay, which one do we lean into? And that has worked against us a little bit. But fundamentally, like, that's kind of the best of all of those things.
At least you can departmentalize it.
Yeah, yeah, true. It does still make your life difficult, and then you see like AI pops up and you're like, oh shit, what are we doing with AI? But that is, and how do you deal with, do you find that is a challenge for portfolio companies that are like, oh, we've seen this, we think this could be cool,
or like someone asks, a customer asks them for something and they just start, right, we're all just going to build that, it's one customer. And then you know, they've not done enough research, they're just sort of excited, and then from various different customer requests, and sort of lose focus on actually what they're building, or there's like a narrative, and or they're focusing so much on. The other thing, I think the hard thing about Web3 founders is they don't just have to think about product, they have to think about token launch,
which is its own product, I would say.
Exactly. So I actually think it's quite difficult to be able to focus on both.
It is,
along with hiring and fundraising. I didn't ask if Alchemy, I didn't know how much you've raised.
So we did a private sale originally about 3 years ago, $2.35 million.
Okay, nice.
So that got us going. But now we have people that pay to use the service. So the exchange charges 3-8%, depending on the ad format. So we typically have, well, we have display, video, and then we're starting to work more now with connected TV providers, which is a whole other thing, conversation itself. That's a very tricky market to navigate. But display and video is our bread and butter, and that is online anywhere. Anywhere where you've seen an ad, we can really facilitate that. Aside from like the walled gardens, like we don't, no one's allowed to play in Facebook except for Facebook and Instagram. Instagram are allowed to play there. But outside of that, we do a lot of work with everyone, really. Where do you... I think I want to talk a bit more about events, because I've been to a few events. I've never really jumped into them. Like, we've seen some value, but I always think, okay, you go to an event, it's a week out of the office. Like, a ton of stuff happens over that week. And I think... yeah, I find it difficult. So I guess pitch me on events, I suppose.
You
should be there by the sounds of it.
So at the beginning of the year, which is, well, the very end of the year, which is what we've already done, we sort of scrape the whole events conference scene database, and we put about, you know, I don't know, 50 events into a spreadsheet.
Yeah. Useful.
And so then basically we then tier the event from tier one to tier three. Tier three is very unlikely that we'll attend. Tier one, we'll probably be there. Then from a VC perspective, is it for IR, investor relations? Because actually we need to raise money as well, so that we can, I think founders forget that like you're not the only ones that have to raise.
Yeah.
And so we have to think about that. So from an IR perspective, and then from a founder perspective, where are we going to find like interesting deal flow? So this year I've been looking a lot around the convergence of Web3 AI.
Okay, yeah.
And so, you know, what are the sort of technical, where do we need to be to find that, for instance? So that's sort of some of the categories, and then locations. And then what sort of activation we want to do there. Whether that be actually we're going to like host and run one of our sort of, we do like research orientated vertical focused events, which sit around our thesis. So we did one, we do payments. So we did an event in East Denver with like PayPal, Solana, Circle, which was on stablecoins. Mm-hmm. And that was back in February. And now look, stablecoins have, you could argue have product market fit.
They do. Yeah, certainly.
So yeah, that was interesting. And so then we do that. I think for next year, the kind of conferences that are on our radar from an event perspective versus just attending, because it's a different ask. I mean, if you're hosting, you can get sponsors and you can collaborate, so it's not such a big cost. So ETH Denver, because we're global, we need to sort of be various different regions. So starts with America.
Yeah.
It sort of in February kicks the year. You sort of understand, see the sentiment, what people are saying, sort of see our US network out there as well. DAS, again, it's sort of finance heavy. It was in London, as in New York. Quite interesting. I think I'm seeing a lot of traction around that. The token 2049s, I think, and it are definitely interesting. ETHCC, it's on our doorstep, and one of the first like Ethereum conferences, and that's always good. And then I have to say, I think DevCon was a fantastic conference in terms of the caliber of people, attracted people who've been in the space a while. The thing is like, we're not trying, like, you know, like, I think Web3 from my experience has like the serious founders who generally in the space, because like yourself, they want to solve problems. We've got quite a few founders from like Revolut or like Monzo have like come across, and or like from OpenAI, and you know, they're like, there's actually so much opportunity. And so we want to find those people. We're not looking for retail. We do, you know, the liquidity side. The conferences do attract both, but it's like which side events you go to as well.
Yeah.
Like, what are the names? Can that qualify where you're spending your time?
Yeah.
And also, even like booking a table for like six people for breakfast and then like getting some of your network together is just like...
Yeah, I think I went to Token 2049 by accident. Bonk did that enormous drone show. So like there's stuff that goes on at these conferences. It's crazy. And then we did ETHCC in Brussels, which I did think was quite good.
ETHCC. Yeah, I think as a founder, you can't get dragged into poor events. I think I have to be honest, I'm speaking so highly of events, but the quality of side events in Web3 was terrible two years ago. Like there was never a name badge. There was like the panels were late. There's also a massive problem with conferences because they're so oversaturated in terms of like the volume of events, because everybody is running side events, which means that like there's a lot of competition.
It's hard to know as well.
Yeah.
Ahead of it.
And
so
everyone just
good.
Says, you know, clicks yes to everything on Luma, and then you don't really know. The conversions are terrible, which is a really a problem for event organizers. Yeah. So I think as a founder, you need to know that your event is well positioned, well branded, that you're going to get people there. And that's why vertical focus helps, because then you can create the audience. I think there's too many generalist events in general. And then if you need to speak to 10 people to find the one person you want to speak to, where if you were literally at an event that was literally on like advertisement budgets.
Yeah.
Well, everyone's there to talk about that topic.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I think there's ways to create environments where they're just it's just more valuable, essentially.
Yeah, we've run our own event a few times in London. So we've done two now. We did one this time last year, and then we did one earlier this year. And we were able to like curate quite a good crowd of people. So it was kind of specifically aimed. We had people that were into blockchain that came along, but it was more people that we'd worked with that had an interest in blockchain, and that had actually, they have been quite beneficial for us. We had someone that's been on the podcast, joined a panel, a lady called Flaminia that works at IPG.
Nice.
She, having been on that panel, she put us into a process with her business, which is called Magna. And then it was supply path optimization, which blockchains are brilliant for in ad tech. Mm. We ended up scoring very highly in that test, and that secured us a deal with Magna. So like that was kind of began from her being on a panel at one of our events.
Yeah.
So that was cool to see. And then we got to, as you say, like own the narrative of stuff that you want to talk about. I always do this presentation similar to the one I did at Zebu Live, where you kind of take people on a journey through like the infrastructure that's being used for ad tech, super old.
Yeah.
Blockchain's new infrastructure. It's being adopted really quickly.
Yeah.
That's why we've used it for this old infrastructure.
Yeah. Also at the House of Commons.
Yes.
When you were doing your pitch, I thought it was really interesting how you position that to an audience that is not in the space.
Yeah. It's I've got two speeds to it. Like I've got two bits that sit either side of it, which is like the technology is really old. Here's how we solve the problems. Mm. And then the bit in the middle is either here's how an ad exchange works or here's how a blockchain works, depending on who we're speaking to. And I just kind of swap that bit out so I can be quite consistent. And it means that if I get like a late last minute call up, like that's what I talk about. It's like three bits and then I swap out the middle bit depending on who the audience is. And that has just been pretty useful. I always update it with new references, but that's just like always there to be like, this is what I'm going to speak about in these three sections. And I'll change the middle bit depending on who is actually in the audience. Yeah. And that's made my life easier for sure. Makes it a bit less nerve-wracking when learning something new every time.
But yeah, I might ask you a question actually.
Yes, go ahead.
So basically, if a founder, so say you're a commercial founder, right? Mm-hmm. There's not that many commercial founders in the space. There's a lot of technical founders that are commercial founders.
Yeah.
What would you say to a technical founder in terms of your customer persona? You're trying to get non-web to Web3 native customers. How's the pitch different, and is the sales pipeline different, or like how long should the sales cycle be? What are the things to sort of consider if you're trying to sort of attract customers outside of the space, right?
I think I don't talk about blockchains really. I think like the best technology becomes invisible pretty quickly. It's like, and the example I always give, and it's a bit of a trope, but like when you pay for something, you don't specify how you paid for it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh yeah, I cashed that coffee, or I Visa'd those shoes, or I Apple paid that. You just say, I bought this thing, you know? And I think that is, how do you get to, I bought this thing for whatever it is that you're trying to sell. And for us, it was, we went through this process though. So it was, to begin with, I did sell and talk about the blockchain. It was like, we're cheaper, we're more transparent. And then we were speaking to people that were going to buy ads through the exchange. And they're like, hey, I understand it's cheaper and more transparent, but what am I buying? Like, what, how do I put cheaper and transparent into a media plan? It's like difficult to do.
Yeah.
So we, using the cheaper and more transparent, we were able to create a product which is really easy to buy. So we call it 100% share of screen. We're able to buy all the ad units on a particular page. Mm-hmm. So if you're like a luxury brand that doesn't want any other ad units on there, you can say, okay, Burberry's going to be the only ad, or a brand from LVMH is going to be the only brand. That is cool. And we do it in a way that's cheaper and more transparent than you can do it today, and can scale more easily. Yeah. So they're like, hey, I want to use 100% share of screen because I don't want Cartier to be next to Rimowa, right?
Yeah.
That changed the way that people thought about us, because they're like, oh, I can just go to them for this one thing.
Yeah.
It didn't matter that it was on a blockchain. That just then appeared in the results thereafter. Yeah. And that...
Yeah.
That has just kind of opened doors for us.
Yeah, yeah. It's really interesting. I think within like Web3 and crypto, it's like we're all so obsessed with the stack.
Mm.
It's like, are you a layer one? Are you a layer two? Or like, are you a dApp?
Yeah.
Or like, where do you sit within the stack? And like, and we're so focused on that. But actually, you know, with the internet, we just call it the internet.
Exactly.
And we just, it's a click of a button. And so we confuse people. And it's like, but potentially you need to sell the problem you're solving versus how you're doing it, and that's just a sort of on top of.
Yeah, because if you think like a lot of the touted statistics about layer twos is like, how many transactions per second can you have, and what's the latency of transactions, and it's like, but I don't know if you've ever thought, I was like, I wonder how many transactions per second Visa are doing. You know, it's just like, I need to pay for this. I'm going to use Visa on my Apple Pay.
Mm.
It's like, does it the transactions per second or the latency of a transaction disappears if you can just do what you need to do when you need to do it. And I think that's why Solana's been really good. It's just like it has a great UX. Like it's still not perfect, but like Phantom's blown up because the user experience is really good and you just buy what you, it's just really easy to do. I'm in some groups that were talking about, there was a new meme coin. I think it was like Shero, it was a cat meme on Ethereum. So like that was the first time people had gone from buying Solana meme coins to Ethereum meme coins. And all anyone complained about was people front run my transaction. I had to pay loads of gas fees. It was a bit of a nightmare to launch a meme coin, but you don't, no one talks about that on Solana.
Like
slightly, and that's where I think Solana do have a bit of an edge. Then I would say if you look at what, like the big meaningful DeFi applications are being built on Ethereum, you know, it's like Tether came from Ethereum, banks are using Ethereum, you know, like that.
But it's more of a major, right?
It's
been around longer.
It has been, and I think that's probably what it is that Ethereum is younger, Solana is younger. I've shouted them out three times this in the last few episodes, but what the super team are doing down the road, that's just impressive to see that kind of grow from grassroots to now down by Amazon down the road, which is pretty sweet. So that was a very long-winded answer to your question, but I think really the crux of what I'm saying is stop explaining how it works and just show people the problem you're solving for them. And then you get to explain how it works, and that validates
it. Show, don't tell. I think that's what's going to be the next big thing for crypto from is like, we need to, now there's like use case. We need people to experience the technology, whether that be like minting an NFT or like what's the utility around something, buying a token, setting up a wallet. We need to show people how to do these things and like give them a good experience, and then it's less daunting and like bring more people into this.
That's where I think like Revolut is pretty cool with what they're doing. It's like, okay, they've got a regulated bank and now you can buy crypto in it. And I like that. It's just a different screen in the app, and then all of a sudden they're in crypto. You know, like that is a very streamlined user experience to just go from, I use this to pay for stuff, to I use this to buy different kinds of
things. Even Coinbase though. Like they've done such an exceptional
job
from a UX perspective and
UX, and also just like the way they've kind of been fighting for the space, you know, like the
stand with crypto stuff.
Exactly right. And just, I think they created a super PAC this year and there was 220 pro crypto politicians they were able to get elected in America. And I think that is like night and day from where we've been. And that's, I was going to ask you that. Like, do you think that given like the 180 in America's approach to blockchain, I imagine the event scene in America next year is just going to go into overdrive and there'll just be like one a week.
I think New York's quite crazy. I've got a few friends in the crypto space and Web3 space in New York, and they have like such a big community there and a really big sort of startup scene, which is quite magical. And that's when like collaboration happens and people build, solve problems, conversations. We don't have the same sense of community in London. It's getting there, but like we need that.
I think Brits are different though, aren't they? They don't tell people about stuff, they're too polite, and I think that
a bit of a blocker, but like, just sort of shouting about why you should join the space and like what's exciting. I think the election, Trump's election is going to be like a big swing around like any regulation, and that's going to only support to bring more people into the space, whether that be from a talent or founder perspective. Obviously crypto had its biggest acquisition this year, Stripe buying Bridge. Again, like I think that's only positive tailwind for the space. I think there's some interesting tailwinds now that hopefully will be good for the space, but to the point it's like founders just continuing to keep their heads down.
I think it's been tough. Like I think I was watching Mark Andreessen on a Joe Rogan podcast, and he was talking about some, he had something like 30 of their portfolio companies that had done really well just were like cut off from banking in the US, which he thought was pretty wild. Because you can't do much if you don't have a bank account. Probably pushes you further on chain, but I think that is tough, you know. And I think where the SEC were being, say, heavy-handed with how they were approaching crypto and its regulations.
Yeah.
I think it stopped people that had good intentions that were wanting to solve a problem in America from like, okay, yeah, I'm going to do this, because they're like, we might get a Wells notice. And you get a Wells notice, no one's going to work with you. It costs you loads of money to fight it, or it costs loads of your money to roll over, because that's just how it goes. And I think that allowed for people that were going to do something they didn't care about if they got in trouble for. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So like, this is where I think it will change dramatically. I'm quite excited about it, because America is the biggest ad market in the entire world. Like,
yeah.
A budget in the UK for a test is somewhere between like £30,000 to £50,000.
Yeah.
A test in America is at a zero. So like $300,000 to $500,000.
So you're very focused on the US from a customer base.
Slowly but surely. Like, it's I think like many British boy bands have learned the hard way. Mm. If you go and try and break America and it doesn't work very well, it's expensive.
Yeah.
Takes its pound of flesh. So I think we want to do it deliberately at the right time. Yeah. I think the work we're doing with Coca-Cola is going to help that a lot. So like, they are supporting our growth, and like, the US is obviously a huge market for Coca-Cola. So just like proving it works with them there, and then through that kind of earning the right to have big conversations, and then ultimately trying to break America, I think probably is on the roadmap somewhere. But it's only 39% of all our budgets are spent in the US.
Okay.
The remaining is spent outside of that. Yeah. It's just a bit more fragmented. It's a bit more regional. Like, Europe's a huge market. London is brilliant for Europe, because you have, it was 6 large media agencies. It's now 5 because Omnicom and IPG have just merged. But they all have massive presences in, so like, WPP headquartered in London. IPG have an enormous office in London. Omnicom, same deal, because a lot of budgets for Europe are planned from London. So it's a great ad market space to be in. It's one of the advantages of being on the GMT time zone is you can kind of speak to everyone at any time, and in English, which helps, particularly if you've got American overlords. But then Omnicom and IPG are massive in the States. So like, our good relationship we have here, I hope would travel, because that's what's worked quite well for me in the past, is that I would sell software to media owners. Like, Warner Brothers is a good example. I sold them a deal in London, and then we just kind of shipped that deal over to North America, and then landed all of Warner Brothers in the US.
So the relationships are already warm.
Exactly. You kind of prove, it's good to prove here, and then it, you can present a very good case, like, it's going to work for you guys because we've shown that it works for your business.
Yeah, London.
And then they can just speak to each other really easily about it, because there's no language barrier.
Yeah.
And it's quite a nice way to sneak in.
Yeah.
It still presents its challenges, you know, because like, the Spanish market is slightly different to the French market, and the German market is different to the Italian market. So like, it, you get good at solving problems in various regions, but in America, you get to sell to a continent. So it's with largely the same language and regulations and interests. So America's going to be cool. But you never know, you know, like, who knows what's going to happen in the future. India is certainly a big and growing ad market. We have a partner there that is, he was at Media Monks. He's moved over to a large media agency and had previously worked in New York at large media agencies, and thinks that there's like a space for Indian-based agencies to win accounts globally, service them from India, because a lot of the agencies in the UK are doing that anyway, right? So like, they will have teams of people in India, so like, why not do the reverse? So that will be interesting to see. It's one of the markets that's adopted blockchain the fastest, and there's 1 billion Indian people, so like, it's huge, potentially huge market. It solves a ton of challenges, so I think it'll just be interesting to see where the technology is adopted, how it's adopted, in which regions is there ad budgets to support that. But
yeah, I think that's a good point in terms of like, adoption across various different regions.
Yeah.
I think US for money, UK and Europe for talent, and Asia for users.
Yeah, it's a good way of thinking about it. Yeah. But then I think there is quite a lot of talent in America, and it's just like a slightly different attitude, you know, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's like that whole sort of Stanford culture.
Yeah.
It's not the same at Cambridge and Oxford. It's less entrepreneurial, more academic.
It is, yeah, I agree. There's nothing wrong with that. So what are you most excited about over the next 12 to 18 months, either from a fun perspective or personally, like where do you see things going?
Yeah, I guess one of the kind of subsectors of, I'm really, really bullish on the convergence of Web3 and AI, how the two technologies kind of almost marry each other and need each other. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of AI companies aren't talking about Web3,
yeah, it's true,
which is a problem, but like, I generally think there's some really interesting, we've done a lot of research around this at Fabric. We've wrote like, it was meant to be a blog post, and now we've written a 42-page thesis around this. So,
nice. You know, like it was long on deep, Web3 and right? AI, yeah.
And so realistically, we cannot argue that like AI is fundamentally going to change the way that we all live. Mm-hmm. It already has. Like, you know, ChatGPT was kind of the first kind of mainstream consumer product that now everyone knows about, and I use more than Google, mm-hmm. and now the way we sort of digest information, use information, even from a content creation perspective, is already changing. But I think AI creates a lot of problems. Mm. So for instance, verification, who owns what, where does it come from? Mm-hmm. Governance, do we want just big tech titans like Facebook, Meta, to your point, to just dictate how we all use AI and what's shared and what isn't from a data perspective? Mm-hmm. Actually, if you think about ChatGPT today, it was only able to get that great based on like 21 years of data that we've given and shared.
Yeah.
And actually, if we're just using ChatGPT and AI generated content, and like we're not actually inputting more data. Mm. So how do you incentivize people to share their data? And tokenomics is quite interesting. Yeah. So blockchain technology is one of the, like everything is encrypted on blockchain. Mm-hmm. From a data perspective, how do you get that walled garden data? Yeah. How do you think about governance? Well, Web3 has given governance a lot more thought than Web2.
Yeah, true.
And from an infrastructure perspective and a payment rail. So I do think that convergence piece, there's a lot of like untrodden territory there that I think we need a few interesting use cases and companies to start for AI to talk about us.
Yeah.
To your point around show don't tell and create value, and so I think that's really, really interesting. I think let's see what happens with like the price of crypto, because I do think that brings more people into the space, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah,
like meme coins, like it or hate it. Like, even from a trading retail perspective, I'm like, I need to like find some altcoins and meme coins. It's part of it.
Yeah,
it's part of the learning experience. It's part of understanding how it all works.
It's I think if you viewed NFTs as like crypto 101, I think like meme coins are really like crypto 201, because I think the challenge you had with NFTs where they were just like illiquid, you know, like you had to find someone that liked your particular one. Mm. You had to sell the entire thing. Whereas with meme coins, it's like you can sell one Pepe or two Pepe or a million Pepe, you know, and they don't need to like it. It's more commoditized in that sense. And I think that people that perhaps entered into crypto and NFTs have been like, okay, I can see how this is a better user experience when it comes to me trading it than NFTs were. But like fundamentally, it's just like, do you think it's funny? Do you like the art? Do you know, that is what it's shared. It's like, there's no, like Bored Apes became a bit of a thing because it's a bit of a status symbol, you know, and it's like, okay, well then that like, meme coins, it's like some of them are funny and some of them aren't, you know what I mean? There's a lot more to it than that, but like, I think that fundamentally that is the hook for most people to get into it, is that like, oh, I think I get that, it's kind of funny, it might go up in value, like this the speculative nature of it is quite interesting. I had a really interesting conversation with a chap on Wednesday last week, and he had the company he worked at had done some research on like, when acquiring new customers, if you say you were guaranteed to get $5 of free credit if you interacted with this thing, versus you might have the chance to win $1,000 of free credit, that you might have a chance to win $1,000 outperformed the $5 guaranteed every single time, because there's that like, the speculation around what you have and the value is going to increase is like, just the way our brains are wired is more attractive. So I think that, it's quite cool. And then to go back to your point on OpenAI, AI platforms using loads of data that we've given them, it has similarities with what made like Facebook so big in the beginning. It's like, it didn't create or own any content. It took content from other platforms. So like well-established like publishing platforms, think like newspapers, magazines that created a presence on the internet when it was invented, like lost a lot of content that was then monetized by Facebook, then Meta now.
Yeah.
And that just seems strikingly similar to what is happening with AI platforms, you know, because, and then you look now and Google are in court at the moment for running a monopoly. Like Meta have been in trouble in the past, you know, just from like monetizing stuff that isn't necessarily theirs. And I think that's, there is the danger of that with AI.
Yeah.
And I think that, as you rightly say, a blockchain provides a very nice way to prove the ownership of whatever that data may be and then reward people in the right way.
Transparency is similar to how you're using the blockchain.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like an immutable record is really useful for stuff like this. You know? So I think that will be interesting to see that play out for sure. I like fundamentally believe that once you get out of the adoption of most things, like user adoption happens really quickly and then there's only so many users you can get on a platform, that point is when advertising becomes like the number one way to monetize anything. WeTransfer did this really nicely. Like they just wanted to people to use the platform to send big files to one another. Mm. And there was a point where you're stuck on a screen looking at your file, your window rolling up, you're uploading whatever it is. That presented them a really nice opportunity to create an ad product because like you have a full page, glossy interstitial, no one else is going to be able to buy that ad unit, and they created a really effective ad product off the back of that. And I think we are still in the user number go up phase, but like you're seeing this now with OpenAI, right? Like they, huge amount of people adopted their platform and now they're like, okay, we're thinking about running some ads. So like everything comes back to ad technology. Google is an ad tech company. Meta is an ad tech company. Like once you get out of the big, we've got loads of users phase, you're like, what can we do with them? Because we can't get more people to buy subscriptions or pay for a software. You know, like Netflix is doing it now. Mm. Spotify did it. You know, like big platforms. So like will Uniswap start with a similar experience to WeTransfer start to think about how they monetize? Like will people like Lens and Farcaster, once they get to critical mass of users and that number starts to slow and people are like, what are we doing about revenue because no more new users, it's like everyone goes, oh, we can monetize it with ads. And I think that we will see that happen from this cycle, is that like the user adoption happens and then platforms will be like, oh, maybe we should think about another way we can make money. It's not just from fees, because that's kind of flattened out after a period of time. It's like we have insights around the wallets that are using the software, and then you don't need to know who that person is to a zero knowledge roll up, but you know that that person has, I don't know, whatever, like has Bitcoin in it, has Ethereum in it, might have a particular NFT. Like that's quite an interesting bit of information for someone to be like, okay, well, I'm Cathay Pacific, I'm trying to sell business class flights, I'm looking for wallets with more than $100,000 in them, or wallets that have traded more than $500,000, because that might be someone that's more likely to pay for business class, or the Four Seasons might think that, or whoever, you know, like the best identifiers for ads online, which is what the game is. It's like, who are you advertising to and how can I get more people that are within the audience that targeted. I want to target?
Yeah.
Come from something that wasn't designed as an identifier. So it's like cookies were never supposed to be an identifier. They just remembered what you'd put in your basket or whether you'd logged into a platform, but also could store information about which websites you went to. So if you went to 20 sports sites, it might be interesting for Nike to show you an ad about their new pair of trainers. And then mobile phones came around, which had a device ID, which was even better than a cookie because it lasted for more than 30 days. So you could then have a better attribution model because you might have kept a phone for 1 year, 2 year, 3 years. And that's what allowed Meta to be so successful, was they had such tight attribution models and the App Store blew up and other apps could like say, okay, we can spend $7.14 in Market A and we will get a user that delivers us $10 basket value. So we make $3 for every $7 we spend. Device IDs disappeared because Apple said you can't really play with these anymore. They only really live in Android. And now what you're seeing is like people creating wallets that don't necessarily tie you to an individual. So there's no personally identifiable information.
Yeah.
So it's pseudo anonymous, but can be used to send more targeted ads to individuals based off of the information that's in that wallet.
Yeah.
And that wasn't supposed to be that. It was just like, you use a wallet to access blockchain. So people are like, I want to access a blockchain. Yeah. And then once you get past this loads of new user phase, people will be like, oh, we can retarget ads based on wallets. So that's my prediction. That's kind of what we're preparing for and building for, is like, let's have the rails to send wallet IDs to buyers if they want to be able to buy certain wallets that have interacted with certain chains or products or whatever it is, and help.
People make money, basically, because it will happen. Yeah. I think interesting, like, advertisement isn't going away, but how you're coming at it from a first principle thinking perspective and applying that to the space is interesting. And I think wallets is interesting. We're investors in Ethermail, which is like targeted advertisement for wallets. Yeah.
It's, sadly, advertising kind of pays for everything. It's like the best business model ever, as much as you might hate it. But the right ad at the right time can be quite
useful. As long as one person doesn't own everything.
Exactly right.
Open versus close argument.
Yeah, certainly. So yeah, I think that's probably a good point for us to wrap on. Eleanor, thank you very much. Thoroughly enjoyed the conversation.
Amazing. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for...
Really enjoyed it.
Joining us on our first new episode on the new set. It's been brilliant. Welcome back anytime.
Oh, thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you, everyone.